bear with me. Okay, in transit. I'm stuck to the leather seat of a taxi, my thighs sweating against a stranger's. This is how it goes. It's midnight and Dubai is a sauna. The driver's door is open, but not a flicker of air comes through it. Outside is as hot as inside, and only the stars look cold. Six of us are rammed in, four women in the back, and two men squashed into the passenger seat, waiting to be taken to the transit hotel. On my left are two middle-aged women in safari shorts, varicose veins swelling up in the heat. On my right, a young student with short hair and a pierced lip. The younger man in front glances back at us, facial hair finely crafted, and his shirt a plastic shade of red. The old man next to him is bald and glistening. Every few seconds, he wipes his head with a handkerchief. After a while, he stops wiping it and says, "We are not sardines." No one else has said a word. It's late, and we're all on different time zones. Mine is Greenwich Mean Time, a scratchy 8 p.m. Adrian will have called by now. He'll wonder why my desk was empty. My ticket is for Comoros. This is hardly the direct route, but I've learnt you can fly anywhere cheap as long as it's via Dubai. I've done this before, only this time I didn't bring anything with me, nor did I book the hotel. "We," says the old man again, "are not sardines." The girl next to me sniggers, and one of the women lets out a hot sigh. I try not to move. It will only draw attention to the sweat between us. Instead, I fix on the drips, forming like pus on the old man's scalp. "We are not sardines." This time the guy with the goatee shifts over and hangs one arm out of the window, only it looks limp, so he brings it in again and hooks it on the door frame. Poser. I stare out at the runway. Finally the driver appears. He pastes himself into the seat and starts the engine. It sets a cassette running, something that sounds like Madonna being strangled in Fast Forward. We drive out of the airport towards the dregs of the city that circuit the terminal like underbrewed tea. Dust flies in and cakes the sweat to my skin. I half close my eyes. An image of Adrian hits me, of the surprise on his face when he realised where I was touching him. "I don't normally do this," he said. I told him I do. Afterwards he said I was a beautiful person. I said, "You don't know me," and I picked up the inflatable globe. The hotel is a large, glossy affair, with mirrors on every wall and reception staff dressed in sequin suits. The varicose veins have gone up to their room, and so has the student. The old man is pacing the lobby, raising his arms and glorifying the air conditioning to heaven, which leaves the guy with the goatee and me at the desk. "I'm afraid we're fully booked," says a receptionist. Her lips sparkle like the sequins. I look at the chairs in the corner of the lobby. "My flight's at 9, I say. Couldn't I just crash here till then?" Her lips unstick and the smile falls. "I'm sorry." Without meaning to, I catch Goatee's eyes. "Are you stuck too?" I ask him. He clears his throat. "Actually, I have a room booked." He hands his card to the receptionist. "The name's Tool," he says. She clocks him in and hands him a key card. "Hey, the bar is 24 hours, Tool says to me. "You could always wait there." I glance at the bar and then back at the receptionist. She purses her lips. "I'll be paying for drinks," I say. I give her an innocent, slightly needy smile, one I usually use on men. Tool catches it and smiles back. "How about I keep you company?" He says it as if he's doing me a favour, but he's looking at my cleavage. I try not to focus on the beard. There's a brief wait while someone comes to take his luggage. I only have a handbag, so we head for the bar. "What's your first name, Tool?" "Dan," he says. We take a seat on embroidered cushions laid out like airport souvenirs. There are no other customers. "I'm Carrie," I say. He nods at my chest. In the heat, I've undone one button too far. A barman comes over and asks what we'd like. Dan asks for a beer, and I say I'll take the same. When it comes, he gulps from the bottle and makes a noise about it. "I sure needed that," he says. "Geez, was that old guy weird." I laugh. Men like it when you laugh at what they say. "So where are you headed?" he asks. "Comoros." "Yeah?" He hasn't a clue. "I'm going to Bangkok." "Great," I say. He looks pleased and adjusts himself on the cushion. I'm trying not to have too many expectations, he says. You know, Thailand, sex, drugs, ladyboys. I'm not going for all that. I'm going for myself, to figure some stuff out. My girlfriend's been getting heavy, you know. I just need some space. I want to find out who I am again. He's one of those. Every trip, I meet at least one who offloads his entire life story in 5 minutes. I pour beer into my glass and watch the bubbles rise. The lights make them sparkle. The whole bar is reflected 4 times over in the mirrors, creating the blurred effect of a glitzy church. My mother would be horrified. So I guess I picked Bangkok because there's no way Susie would ever go there. She's kind of conservative. Maybe I need to get it out of my system. Maybe you need to get it into your system, I say, calling the barman over for another beer. I didn't mean much by it, but Dan is giving it intense consideration, nodding and screwing up his forehead. He's probably in therapy. You're right, you know. God, I think you're really onto something. I mean, all my life I've done the right thing. I got the grades, went to med school, met a girl. What I need to do is go crazy. I glaze over, and my mind drifts back to Adrian. Last night was crazy for him. He'll be in the room where we were, and it'll seem empty now, though it's been empty most nights. He'll pick up the inflatable globe and wonder. I told him once how sometimes I like to disappear. He looked confused. He's the only one in the office still oblivious to my exploits, to the fact that I've had sex with almost every male on the fourth floor, even Alf from IT. He thinks I'm just friendly. I'm friendly to him, even though the others aren't. He buys me sandwiches when I'm too busy to stop for lunch, and if he goes to Sainsbury's, he buys me Taste the Different ones and says, "You know what? You really can." These are the things I know about him. At some point soon, he will call, because he's not the type to have a one-night stand. He thinks this is the start of something. Are you listening, Carrie? Huh? We're on a third beer, and Dan is still talking. Well, you seem easygoing, you know, liberal-minded. Sure you know what it's like when you just need a break. Yes, I say, looking at him properly for the first time. I do. Sometimes that's all it takes. A brief connection. When it happens, I can ignore the fact that his facial hair is sculpted like a suburban hedge. That he has those small, sincere eyes that never really look at me. That he's rested a hand on the inside of his thigh as if to draw my attention there. That he's so self-absorbed he'd miss an earthquake. He checks his watch. Wow, we've been talking a long time. I nod. Listen, my room's a double. You're welcome to, you know, crash. I think he winks, but it's hard to tell when I've drunk a bit and his eyes are so small. Then I see his hand move closer to his crotch. I'm pretty tired, I say. He swallows the last of his beer and eyes the door. Come on. It's a king-size bed. I lie on my back in my white shirt and knickers. Dan has his boxers on. He hitches the sheet down to his hips so I can see his chest heaving up and down. It's a chest he's dedicated as much time to as the goatee. He puts his hand behind his head, revealing neat tufts of underarm hair. His nipples are hard as screws. This is what I love, he says. This kind of random thing that can happen on the road. You call this the road? Well, you know, life. He rolls his head to look at me. We're in transit, I say. I turn to the wall. Then I feel it. The hand. First it touches my side, then gets under my shirt, then creeps up towards my armpit and over to my breast. I don't move. Some people take that as a sign of consent. I hear the bed creak before I feel the next move. Then suddenly he's over me, a dense mass of sculpted muscle easing down level as an ironing board, his skin shiny and firm. Carrie, he says, searching for a reaction. Mechanically, I run a hand down his back towards his arse, and he bucks forward and presses between my legs. I get a hand beneath him and nudge at his hip. You have a girlfriend, I say. Not like you. He kisses my neck. What am I? I hadn't meant to say it out loud. Hot, he says. When I was a teenager, I did it to spite my mother. The day she'd realized I'd humped half the boys at the Holy Ghost of St. Stephen, she turned electric blue and said the devil had made me. She used to crawl up the walls with that stuff. Now the anger has turned to disappointment and she shut herself indoors. I don't want you to go out, she tells me, not if this is what the world has made of you. I want to tell her I made me. I want to tell her you made me. Sometimes I think it would make her sick. Other times I think she would cry and hold on to me. I'm not ready for either, so for now I keep still. It doesn't take Dan long, and then he rolls off me and falls asleep. Soon after that, he starts snoring. I hold my watch up to the window and check the time. Another 3 hours before I have to go, I could still get some sleep. I get up and slide past Dan off the bed. In one of the cupboards, I find some blankets and arrange them in a pile on the floor by the window. The snoring is getting violent. I get up again, pull on my clothes, and take the bedding out to the corridor and arrange it close to the wall so I'm out of the way. It's quiet here, and I'm alone. It makes my skin feel dirty. When you've done it as much as I do, you start to wonder where the boundary is. Who wouldn't I let have me? I did it with Alf from IT, that slimy motorbike salesman. Why not this freak as well? Make a collection of them. I'm going to hell anyway. I may as well take a scrapbook. But every time he pulls out, a piece of me is taken. He falls asleep and spits out an island. There are islands off me all around the world now. One day I'll go to them. This is how it happened with Adrian. I was stressed over the sales figures, and he asked if I wanted to go for a drink, just us. He was sweet about it, and we sat in the booth and talked about our families. He said his were worried he didn't get out enough. I said mine thought I got out too much. It didn't occur to me until he turned red and asked if I'd like another drink that he considered this a date. I tried not to laugh and said, "How about we get something to eat?" His face fell when he explained he had to get back to feed his sister's cat. I said, "I'll come with you, we can get takeaway." Then there was the problem of his bicycle. He didn't want to leave it, but he was worried it would be rude to let me travel separately. I said he should go wild, leave the bike, and cycle back tomorrow instead. Eventually he agreed. I grabbed his helmet. He put on his reflective jacket, and we took the train. There's a place I go in my head called In Transit. It's an airport lounge with rows and rows of plastic yellow chairs screwed down to the floor. I sit on one of them cross-legged and focus on the reflection of myself in the window and try very hard to feel my own skin. If I don't move, I might be able to. I don't know why I made the move on Adrian. Maybe it was somewhere to be last night. Maybe it was because when I sat there on his living room floor, singing along to God Gave Rock and Roll to You, I knew he was looking at me. It wasn't the way others look at me. He was looking at me as if I was someone amazing. At last, I'm dozing in the hotel corridor, but the peace is broken by the sound of someone muttering and pacing towards me. He draws closer and trips on my foot. "Good gracious, a beggar!" It's old man Sardines, and he's still in his clothes. "Sorry," I say, sitting up. He stares at me. "Are you a prostitute?" he says. "No." "You look like a prostitute." "I knew one once." "Thanks," I rub my eyes. "Her name was Helena." "Mine's Carrie," I say. He goes on looking at me and then gestures the length of the corridor. "I was just walking the planes." "I'm sorry I got in the way." I stand up and check the time. I have to get a flight soon anyway. "Is that your room?" "I don't have a room," I tell him. "Come to mine. It's romantic." I laugh. "Not if you think I'm a prostitute." "You're not a prostitute. Whoever said that?" I shrug. He pads back down the corridor, and I let the blankets go, but he keep hold of the pillow. "So where are you going to?" I ask him, after I followed him up 3 flights of stairs. "Room 443. I meant after that. "Oh, this is it for me." He doesn't switch the light on. For a moment I freeze in the doorway, the pillow clutched to my middle. I don't want anyone else tonight. But the old man smiles and beckons me in. I take a step forward and peer round to see that the entire far wall is a window looking out over Dubai. The city is split into islands of light, and behind them is the desert. "Have a seat." He gestures to the bed. I hesitate before going in, and he stands there tapping his leg. "Splendid, isn't it?" He sweeps an arm towards the window. I sit down and look out. Dawn is approaching, and the sky is an unclean orange over temples and skyscrapers and forgotten flat roofs. The old man gets out his handkerchief. "Makes me hot just to look at it," he says, mopping his forehead. I hug my arms around my chest and try not to look at him, but he fixes on me as if I'm a tropical insect. "Did you know they eat salad for breakfast in this country?" he says. I nod and rub at the dry skin on my elbows. real live lettuce leaves and tomato and cucumber. I've been here before, I tell him. Have you really? What an adventurer. I stare past him at the view, the familiar early morning smear from another man's window. I've been around, I say. At this, he takes his eyes off me and turns back to the window. The sun has risen above the horizon, and you can see the dust thickening outside. I sit very still and try to think of all the places I haven't been touched. Under my fingernails, the sides of my knees, my wrists, the tops of my ears, that dent where my scalp meets the back of my neck. There's more of me here than I thought.